This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Inclusive Collective, where we bring you news and analysis of the latest in people and workplace culture and share stories and learnings of inclusive people, organizations, and innovation. I am your co-host, Nadia Butt. I'm a workplace culture strategist and talent development consultant, and I'm here with my good friend, Rob Hadley, a people and culture strategist specializing in DE&I and people analytics. Rob! What is good? How are you? How are your allergies? That's what I want to know.
I had springtime questions for you as well. So I seem to be doing okay. I was out of the country when things were in full bloom. That was strategically smart on my part.
I mean, there was no flowers. Are there no flowers and plants in Colombia?
There's no. Well, but they're a different season, right? They're always in bloom because they're.
Wait, so are they below the equator?
I don't know where they are. Actually, I was there, but I don't.
It's a different season.
I believe they're north of the equator, but ever so slightly.
Oh, but they have the same they have a different season than us.
Because they're north of Ecuador, which I believe means equator.
Okay.
I just made that up.
I was like, I don't think that's true. I'll never understand the different seasons, opposite seasons below the equator. I think that's what it is. But I also don't understand time when you're on a plane and time change. And it always confuses me.
You know the Earth's sphere, right?
Yeah, do I? I don't know. Yes, I know that. Did you learn anything new in Colombia? Anything like that you didn't know before about that country or...
I'm thinking because now it's been like 10 days and you get fully back into your normal routine. But we were on a coast close to Nicaragua and saw some boats that have been destroyed based on narco traffic. So still, that's something that's still very prominent there and important to them as well. So, great. Great country, beautiful
good
place.
Food. Sure.
Food was fine.
Wowza.
those are fighting words, really, I'm sure, for a Colombian. I'm just trying to think that I have things that I really enjoyed. And they don't do, you know what I learned? Not much beans, right? So like,
that's interesting.
Right. So we're Brazilian, so tons of beans in our diet, right?
Well, when I went to Peru definitely had quite a bit of beans in there, in a lot of their meals.
So
that is interesting.
So not enough beans for my liking.
Yeah.
That's a learning.
That's quite a learning. Yeah. Yeah. Curious now about your digestion, but we'll talk about that in another episode. But Rob, there's a lot going on in the world right now. So what are some of the things we're going to talk about?
This week on the big show, Inclusive Collective, we'll be talking to Dr. Amanda Carroll. We're also going to chat about our friends at Adidas and our best friend, Kanye West. We'll also talk about the massive potential of the AAPI media audience and the opportunity there. And then we're also going to be talking or ranting and raving in particular about student protests across college and university campuses across America. But first, Nadia, let's talk details, also known as the deets.
The deets.
All right.
What do you got for us this week?
Let's start with Kanye.
Kanye? Are we questioning that? Do Kanye? We really want to talk about that?
Kanye? Yeekon? German footwear and apparel maker Adidas had a little expose in Fortune this past week about some of the issues they've had in their DE&I efforts. So in 2020, Nadia, this is going back a bit, there were 12 Black associates. They formed a coalition, and they forced the company to take on ambitious DE&I goals. First of all, awesome. The 12 people did this, right? Mm-hmm. Pressured company leadership to take a more aggressive stance with regard to DE&I. Since, however, most of these folks have left, and nearly all the VP and above folks in North America that were of the non-dominant group have been jettisoned. And then, of course, there's our who I call our friend Yi.
Stop calling him our friend.
Just
he's
being
like
nice.
A known anti-Semite. Like,
coming back from Colombia, just feeling nice and friendly. But
are you?
So the story is really about how all the attention has been on Kanye West, and as far back as 2018, he had said some very inflammatory things, like that slavery was a choice. He'd also said offensive things in meetings for years, and then finally, the company severed ties with him after his anti-Semitic remarks on social media in 2022.
So that's what it took.
They have a they're very forgiving.
Yeah.
Really overshadowed a lot of the negative things inside the company about the company culture and its relationship with Black employees. Mm-hmm. And so the article points out a lot of this. Obviously, Adidas says none of this is true. What were your thoughts on just looking at some of the things about the company culture piece?
Well, so much to unpack there in general. So the article that you shared said many Black leaders were, quote, microaggressed out, end quote. I mean, that's telling, right? So, like, they left because they were receiving so many microaggressions that I would imagine it just became so overwhelming, so, like, burnt out, just offensive, right? I think what I appreciated from this article was that it seemed like the author talked to several employees, past and present. And I appreciate at the end of the article, they outline like three examples or like three lessons that they shared, which I'm going to say them right now, but I don't think they're anything new or alarming to people. But like one is like, don't tokenize or overwhelm like your POC or historically marginalized employees with all of like the DEI work that needs to happen. Retention is just as important as recruitment, right? So like be transparent about your process, your goals. Mm-hmm. And then I think the third was around like representation and at the leadership level and how that's like just ever so important. So I value those kind of three reminders.
Yeah. 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 I like those too. I think the first one was most important that I really liked was the, we got some problems. Let's throw it out to folks that have been historically underrepresented and, on a volunteer basis, right? Doesn't necessarily fit with what we normally describe as behaviors when you have a real issue inside your organization. But, everything you need to know doesn't come from the fact that they're selling the Yeezy shoe again, right? Isn't that everything we need to know?
Oh, are they? See, I'm not up to like fashion. I know they're selling like a Trump shoe.
No, they're not. Well, he's selling his own shoe.
The marketplace, yeah.
Yeah, so last year...
So Adidas is selling the Yeezy shoe?
They said last year that they would sell the remaining Yeezy shoe inventory.
Okay.
And they would donate that money to charity.
Okay.
They paused in November out of sensitivity to Israelis, I guess. I honestly don't know what their logic is in some of these things. But they're selling them again, Nadia. So,
And still donating the proceeds to?
They are. But obviously, that's still platforming this, right? And so still, people show up at my son's Jewish school with Yeezys, right? And you're like...
Not a good look.
Yeah, you're like, so this company, I feel, has some real issues in terms of their moral compass. And they're on the list, Nadia. No more Adidas for Rob.
No more Adidas for Rob. No, so you don't wear Gazelles,
I'm not wearing Gazelles. I'm not wearing Sambas. I'm not wearing Yeezys.
They're the same. It's just interesting, like, It's like whatever we can monetize and make a buck off of, right? It's like that's the value. That's like what organizations' values are. And that's like set really sad to me.
Yeah. So they're off the list.
We'll probably talk a little bit about that in later on today, about just like monetizing and companies kind of not aligning to their values. But
throw out your gazelles, Nadia. That's what I'm telling you.
I know. I remember wearing gazelles have been in fashion for decades.
Yeah, they're timeless.
Yeah, they are timeless. But yeah.
Too bad I can't wear them anymore.
Too bad they're racist. So, all right. Well, thanks for that, Rob. So let's go into the next story here. We've talked a lot about the lack of representation in Hollywood before, but I wanted to share a recent Hollywood Reporter article that referenced that back in 2021, McKinsey Consulting had published a series of reports exploring the entertainment industry's representation and inclusion of historically excluded people. And through this research, it totaled up that the potential financial revenue that Hollywood could stand to gain if it had adopted more culturally inclusive business solutions was $10 billion per year. Mm. And that would entail things, you know, like closing the Black inequity gap and the $12 to $18 billion from properly valuing Latino professionals and consumers. And in a more recent study that was conducted based on U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data, it could have gained $2 to $4.4 billion from tapping into the Asian and Pacific Islander markets. I know we've talked about this before, Rob. Maybe you're sick of talking about the Hollywood and entertainment business, but any thoughts or any additional thoughts you want to share?
No, I was excited. Well, first of all, it was done by McKinsey, so I had to check the math. Right.
Okay. Like
I was okay. Looked like big numbers, but I like them pulling this all together and looking at it all taken together, the series, the McKinsey study trilogy that they have, right?
Yeah,
like not trilogy. To be confused with the superhero trilogies. But if you tell people that something is not for them, they'll believe you, right? If you show them that something is not necessarily for them in this very diverse country, you're limiting your total addressable market whenever you, right? So I think it's a huge opportunity. So I actually am happy that you pulled this back and that they looked at all these things together. Mm-hmm. If you see that a company is not taking diversity seriously in their long-term planning, that, you know, it seems like that company would be a bad bet going forward. So if you remember the inclusion list for films and for producers, so it ranked the studios based on their inclusivity.
Yep, right.
My guess with those that are doing a good job or at the top of that list would be and do it, making serious efforts to reach what I'll call it, non-traditional or whatever, non-dominant
race or group
demographic audiences.
Sure. Yeah.
That they're going to do better going forward because the demographics are shifting so wildly over the next, you know, 25, 50 years. So I thought it was, I really liked looking at them all together. And so I'm happy you did pull this in. What did you think?
Yeah. You know, similarly, like I had similar thoughts of, especially you had shared that article a couple months ago that you're referencing that study. And I think it's important to recognize that in this article, it discussed like the disaggregating representation data captured in the report by genre, by producing country, by qualitative analysis is particularly crucial for the umbrella identity known as API. And I focus on that. We've talked about that a lot. I'm saying it now because it's also, is it Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month this month? I don't know those months, so I apologize if I'm
not. I think of every month as Asian.
Every American month Pacific is. Islander Anyways, month. Yeah. But I think that in particular, like this group, you know, this group of people or this community of people, API, it tends to obscure, like almost erase certain groups, particularly like Pacifica.
Sure.
And of course, like when you break down what Asia is, like there's South Asia, North Asia, Southeast Asia, right? Central Asia, West Asia, Near East Asia. And like, so I really appreciated that. I appreciated the qualitative analysis because I think it's also important to talk to people to understand their sentiments and perceptions. That's also just as valid as actual hard data. So, you know, I would recommend for folks to read this article and then also take a look at the report if they are interested in understanding more around what's happening in Hollywood as it relates to D and I.
Love it.
And E.
And All of them.
All of them.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Nadia. That's going to be it for the deets today. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Dr. Amanda Carroll. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back, folks. So this week on Inclusive Collective, we welcome Dr. Amanda Carroll. Dr. Carroll has an extensive background in learning development, leadership development, change management, and organizational effectiveness. She is currently the Director of Manager Capability at Microsoft. She previously has worked as a Senior Manager for Leadership and Management Development at Nuance Communications and a Senior Program Manager for Leadership Development at Liberty Mutual. She holds a BA from UNH, a JD from Suffolk University, 2 master's degrees in adult education and organizational learning, and a doctorate in education from the Organizational Leaders Studies Program at Northeastern University. She obviously and clearly values education and learning. Her research interests include the influence of managers, gender-linked behaviors, and the perceived support of transfer of learning. She lives in the Boston area with her husband and 2 kiddos and 2 doggies, Grizzly and Gigi. Not to mention, and I share this as a disclaimer, she has been my mentor for well over 15 years now and a very good friend to me. Welcome, Dr. Amanda Carroll, to Inclusive Collective Podcast.
Thanks. I'm super excited to be here. That was a mouthful.
Dr. Carroll, thanks for joining us. It's great to see you. Liberty Mutual, I work there too. How about that?
No, it's crazy. And you don't need to call me Dr. Carroll. Just call me Amanda. Thank you, though.
Well, it's great to see you. Let's start with your research. We wanted to dive into your research. Sure. and talk. So research on gender inequality at the leadership manager level. I know there's just so many things that you can pull from, but just give me 1 or 2 surprising things that you learned doing that research. What are the big takeaways? What's something that, even as someone that has been in companies for a long time and made some of these observations, I would be surprised to hear.
Okay. So I'll go with my first surprise, and I'm going to hit it right out with my first bias, because I actually wanted to end my research by saying, we need more females in leadership positions. Mm. That's what I really wanted to happen. So I was already deciding what I wanted the end result to be. That was not necessarily the end result. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me, maybe a disappointment, but also a little surprise, where it's not necessarily females, it's the feminine characteristics that we need when it comes to the transfer of learning. So we need sympathy, we need nurturing, we need warmth, we need understanding of others, and those are all characterized as feminine. So it didn't lead to where I exactly thought it would, but it was kind of close, knowing that there are feminine characteristics. The other piece was men, or any gender, really, can have those characteristics. So some of the best leaders or managers that some people had, including myself, have been men. So how did that match? Because they had those characteristics that actually help that transfer of learning. So, and when I say transfer of learning, I mean application. You go to a training, we all have been there, we're super excited, we have all these great ideas, we go back to our desk and we go back to our emails, we go back to our meetings, and we don't do it, we don't apply it. So that's really what the study was. Like, what are the characteristics that will help people from their manager to apply what they've learned? And there were mostly feminine, a couple of masculine, where leadership came up, and that tends to be a masculine characteristic, but mostly feminine or neutral. So that was exciting.
So like, Rob, do you have a follow-up question to that? Because I feel like I'm
just thinking about all the different ways to think about that. And I love that so much. I love like everything about that. Now the first observation is that, you know, there's a high correlation between those feminine characteristics and females, right? So there's still females tend to to have more of the characteristics that you find to be effective, mm-hmm. right? So that's still something that makes a ton of sense. But then the really important observation that, and the vice versa as well, right? That men tend to often lack some of the characteristics that are very important in being a great leader.
Right.
And so that, and men can develop these things as well. If they're given the proper environment and capability building, and I think it's just a really, really important finding. So it's great.
Yeah, it was. And the other piece, just as an aside, that I thought was super interesting was when I was talking to my participants, all of them said, oh, I don't see gender. So gender blindness, which I had not really heard of as much, right? I've heard of other kind of blindnesses, but I hadn't heard much on gender blindness yet. So almost to a person, oh, I don't see it. I look for personality traits. I look for management style. I look for whatever, right? Whatever those personality values, morals, whatever. I don't see gender, though. Gender doesn't come into it. Yet a few questions later, 7 out of the 9 that I talked to said something along, oh, I would much prefer a woman, or I'd much prefer a man. Interestingly, why would you prefer that if you don't see that, right? So that was a big kind of aha moment for me as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's wild. And just as a side note, I want our listeners who've been listening to our podcast, every time I've mentioned, and it's been a number of times, several times, I've said, you can't send someone to the island of training and expect behaviors and mindsets to shift overnight when they come back from the island of training. That actually was quoted from Amanda Carroll. Nice. So I want to just, we have the person on the phone, on the line here who.
Proper citation.
Thank you for that. Yeah, because the tan fades or the sunburn.
It doesn't stay. So, Amanda, I've known you for 15 plus years, and, I know both our personal journeys as it relates to, diversity, equity, inclusion, mitigating bias. You even mentioned some of the bias that showed up for yourself, as you were going through your research, has kind of been a constant journey, right? And I'm curious what your experience has been on embedding concepts of diversity, equity, inclusion into learning development, particularly into curriculum. Mm. What has it been like for you, and how would one do it if they were a learning professional? And I know that's a really large question, but I'm just curious, how do you approach that?
Yeah, it is a great question. And I think it's one we'll always be trying to answer, right? We'll always be trying to figure it out. I think the multiple perspectives of people on the team come in handy. Another set of eyes, a lot of sets of eyes are even better. So I think that's a big piece. And I think it's critical. As I think about it, when we're delivering as kind of learning people, we need the people who are listening to us to trust us, to feel safe, to be able to bring up a challenge they're having, especially in a workshop, right? To feel safe and also to feel represented. So we need to make sure we're getting to in an authentic way that everyone in that room, virtual room, wherever they are, right? Feel like, you know what? These people are talking to me. So what's in it for the person, right? So it is super critical. And I really do think that just making sure, rechecking and having those other sets of eyes to just look at it, when we have our DE&I group that will do it. We have lots of groups that do it. So I feel lucky about that. Can I throw out a challenge though? If you don't mind.
Of course.
Of the biggest challenges that I'm having is, and I'm going to give it as an example because I think this is easier. So we're starting to see designers use inanimate objects to have conversations. And I get it in one sense, right? We don't have bias if we see, a tree talking to an inanimate object, right? However, that's not real life. It's not realistic. And if we're trying to get managers to learn how to do some of this stuff, we need the human piece. So I think there's a little bit of, and maybe it's wrong, right? It's a fear or it's a misunderstanding that DE&I is taking the human out. I think DE&I wants to put the human in. So I think the problem that we're going to see, and that we're, I'm already starting to see it, when I look at things and I'm like, I can't have inanimate objects talking to each other. Why? They don't show emotions. They don't show nonverbals for those of us who are can see, right? Don't show nonverbals. Mm-hmm. They, you can't even hear tone because some of the voices they're using are the robotic type, right?
Oh, yeah.
Computer, so right, that's generator. Not real life. So if we bring that in front of managers and say, hey, look at this opportunity, this difficult conversation, how do you think it went? Well, it's perfect because you have no emotions and no humanity. So I think that's, to me, the biggest challenge around, not biggest, but it's one of them. Like, we got to keep the human in. We have to be representing. And how can we do that with, and yeah, bias might come into it, but that's part of this too, right? It's all part of it.
Right.
So I think that's a challenge that I've been, over the past couple of weeks, has just been gnawing at me. So I figured I'd share it with both of you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad.
Challenge accepted. I don't do any training, but we can definitely... Yeah, and I think it's a really good point. And so if we can't send people, you know, back to Nadia's often quoted piece, if we can't send people to the island of training, right, which is like sounds almost like Alcatraz, then if we can't do that and have them emerge as different leaders, what are some of the hot things or the things that you advocate for that we can do?
Yeah.
In terms of changing behaviors in real ways, where they get where people are putting their learnings into practice in that human way that you're talking.
We have to embed it. We have to embed it. Yes, there's great workshops, and we still want to do those, but we have to embed it. And it needs a few things. It needs leadership support from the top, right? It cannot be. Well, we've done some great grassroots. You probably have too, right? We can do some grassroots, but it doesn't hit as hard. So you need the organizational support. You also need, when you're thinking from a learning perspective, the design of the learning has to mimic the job or what the person's doing. You cannot say, you know, it just has to be something that, and from a manager perspective, that happens to them all the time. It can't be something kind of far removed and then us expecting them to bring that back to their table.
And apply it practically.
Yeah, right, because it's not going to make sense. So it has to mimic it. You know, and then the third, it has to be just in time. And we hear that all the time in the learning space, but it has to be, wow, I have a conversation I have to have with a direct report on Monday. I need to, it's going to be tough. What am I going to go look and find so I can do it? It's not a 4-day workshop because I need this for Monday. Maybe it's a checklist. Maybe it's a, right? It has to be something that they can touch, feel, and do something with at the time of need. So that's the way I would hope that we can do it. And the way I would really think about it is it has to also be a choose your own adventure. I say this all the time. We're not all learning the same way. We're not all needing the same stuff. So we need to put, from a learning perspective, we need to put stuff out there, multiple things. So that way, oh, you know what? You like a TED Talk? Perfect. You go watch the TED Talk. You like an article? Here's an article. Here's a workshop if you want to dive in even deeper. We have to have like a huge group of modalities in order for people to choose their own adventure that works best for them.
I love that. And you probably said it, but if you want to expand on it, just because I think over the last 4 or 5, maybe 6 years, a lot, when you talk about modalities, a lot has been researched around like there's 5 generations in the workplace right now. So like the generational differences in terms of what they prefer, the preferences, right? The neurodivergence, the preferences in learning in general. And then we have this element of hybrid work, remote work, in-person work, which like was a challenge that was already there before, but it was exacerbated, I think, due to the pandemic. What other things are you observing right now? And, you know, in how we interact with each other, because I would imagine that's also informal learning as it, you know, as it pertains to transfer of learning.
Yeah, I love that interact piece, because that's the hardest piece sometimes, especially like you said, there's a lot of virtual. We use breakout rooms all the time, the best we can, to try and get people in a room together to just talk through some issues they might be having, right? Interesting that you say the generational thing. I was just talking to a designer this past week or two, and I was saying, oh, let's put this article in. This is a great book. And she said, and she's younger, learning doesn't come from an article or a book. And I was like, what? Swish me. Don't tell all those schools I went to that either. But it was just great insight. And she then went to say, a learner experience is not about reading the article. It's the reflection and what they do with it after. But I was thinking, we're going to put all these articles and all these books. And then, no, maybe we're not going to put so many from, you know. So I thought that was good. So back to kind of that question. I think part of it is I mentioned it already, but having those sessions where they can all get together. And I mean, I'm looking at managers right now, but where managers can have some peer-to-peer support. It's not coming from their manager or their, there should be some, but that peer-to-peer support is also super, super important. And how can we make sure they understand the importance of it, but also feel like, hey, here's a space for us to get with other managers and talk to them. So building that out is really going to be a key for me as well.
There's been a lot with regard to DEI, and obviously you work with some very progressive organizations that are still moving forward with their DEI plans. I just wonder if you have any thoughts on the future of DEI and in the L&D space, just broad observations.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not considered separate. I think that's probably the biggest piece. I think that awareness, and I want it to be just part of our everyday work, right? That representation we talked about, that how people can feel like they belong, all of those, how can we make it part of our work all the time? And I do think it's almost there, at least with the great people I've been able to work with. So I'm happy about that. And then the added piece is that piece that I talked about with the challenge is keep it human. So yes, I'm hoping we can all be one and not have to have a separate kind of DE&I people or group. Maybe it's all just embedded, and we're going to just continue to keep it human. We're going to say, you know what? The purpose of DE&I was not to have inanimate objects talk to each other. That's not the purpose, right? Yeah. The purpose is not, it's to actually bring out all human and not just a few human, right? So really thinking about that humanity piece, because that I think designers, and I will include myself, like, how do I make this so everyone feels, and next thing you know, I could be using a triangle and a square or something, you know, and I have to be careful. Like, so I think that's all. That's the way I just want it to be a, yes, we're all keeping the human in. We all are thinking about it. It's not just a couple of people who are thinking about it. And that's the way I hope it will be in the future.
Yeah, that's a great reminder to for folks in the learning space to consider how we continue to foster the psychological safe environment and trust and build vulnerability and then be able to learn with each other. So I appreciate that. Amanda, can you give our listeners one resource that you would recommend to folks related to L&D maybe, or the DE&I space?
I can. My first thought was, I have not read a real, like, I've only read a beach read since I graduated, so I have not looked at anything, and I've tried not to. However, I don't know if you know Frances Fry, you probably have, it's probably come up, but she is a Harvard business professor who has helped other companies. And her TED Talk on building and rebuilding trust is unbelievable. Everything she touches, I feel like we'd be good friends. But I really, really like everything she touches. I have not read her books yet. As I said, I'm still in my beach read phase, so I will get to them. But that TED Talk she does on building and rebuilding trust talks about empathy, authenticity, and logic, and the wobbles if we don't have enough of them each. So it really goes, and then she really goes into empathy, which is that human piece that I kept saying about. So, she's great.
Great.
I would follow her if I were you.
Okay. On it. We'll make sure we reference that to our audience, our listeners as well. Well, Dr. Amanda Carroll, thank you so much for joining us this week on Inclusive Collective.
You're welcome. This was so easy. I thought it was going to be hard. I was very nervous. I was nervous at first, and this was a really good conversation.
We can do it again. We can do it again if you want.
We will do it again. We will. Well, stay with us, folks. We'll be right back for our Conv Reflections and Raves and Rants.
All right. Well, welcome back to Inclusive Collective. We just finished chatting with Dr. Amanda Carroll. Nadia, your very
bestie.
Good friend.
Like, and you want a top mentor. Tier. Yeah. You want to like get in my top tier circle. You have to beat her. That's how close of friends we are.
Well, it doesn't seem like that's going to be possible because she seems very, very impressive and really enjoyed having that conversation. You talk to her almost every day. Did you take anything new away from our chat?
I did actually, you know, and I'll just say this on a personal note. I obviously, you know, I've said it, like, I really benefit from Amanda's mentorship and guidance over the course of my career. And I've seen her interact with employees, particular leaders, and her dedication to developing and nurturing talent and really fostering kind of these like leadership qualities that we talk about is inspiring for me. What I appreciated her mentioning today was the reminder of like that human element. And I agree to that because I've been seeing a lot of, you know, it kind of goes back to like this, like check the box mentality of like, okay, if you do that, it's like people want the recipe for like success. They want the recipe to like how to be a good leader. So if I do this and then, I get that result. And it's like, no, there's a human element to people and to reaction and to reflection and to all of these different kind of characteristics. And so I really appreciate that reminder to consider that as like you're designing or developing or delivering any sort of learning content. What were your takeaways?
Yeah, I think, and obviously that was a big one. I think that you just, listening to you, I was just thinking that leader is the most overused word in our world, right?
Uh-huh. Like, we just tell everyone they're leaders.
Leaders, there's so little leadership in the world, right? It's just such a deficit. Definitely really enjoyed the conversation, some of the things that I could see that I wish I'd crossed paths with Amanda sooner. Maybe I would be a better leader if I had been able to benefit from some of the training that and the work that she has done as well. Really liked the research finding, right? We led off with that.
Yeah.
And I think it's just such a good, it's an important frame, and I'll have to think about other ways that this can be applied as well, because like I said, the qualities that are important just happen to be most often associated with females, right?
Right.
But there's nothing that says
or female. Female identifiers or what tends to be, what female qualities are, characteristics.
Yeah. And so oftentimes people recoil from, if you're having a conversation about gender or race, and say, well, we need to improve representation of call it non-male identifying folks in senior leadership. However, if you change that conversation to we need to emphasize these traits as being the most effective for leadership, doesn't matter
to
what
lead
the person's gender identification is.
Yeah, right.
Now we're having a productive conversation. So that's the kind of real data, research-driven findings that can be very helpfully applied in organization and change the tenor of the conversation. Because right now we have to change the tenor of the conversation because it's gotten away from us a little bit. And
it
so
has,
I just thought that was a really great.
A lot of it.
That was a great, really enjoyed that that thought.
That's great. Look at that deep con reflection. Appreciate that. So it is that time.
Yeah.
Rants and raves, and you are bringing us in with the rant today.
Well.
You had a rant. But
I'm going to change my rant. Well, so I had a lot of reflections. I was at the Qualtrics conference this past week. And
in Utah,
a company, right? But 10,000 data scientists, data analysts type people from a lot of different spheres of business, government, education, things like that. And so, my observation was, wow, corporate America is really white.
I
didn't notice this before.
Did you not notice?
No.
That?
No, I came home. I told
like Juliana. My day one of my career when I entered.
Yeah. Just walking around and just, you know, and like, wow.
Do you think it was really a component of because you were in Utah, or do you think no? It was
no,
like,
these people from all over corporate,
the country,
right? And and I was noticing it because I was just noticing what I was wearing and then everyone else was wearing. And I was like, we're all dressed the same. This is a function of not being Banana Republic.
Burke's Brothers.
It's like button down, like, oh, my cool little sport coat.
Yeah, like a vest. Oh,
like
okay.
My, you know, semi-athletic sneaker. Dress sneakers. Oh, I'm so cool. And so it's just a function of not being at big conferences for a long time since I was in a big corporation. So that was the norm.
Yeah.
And so just working mostly, you know, very, you know, with organizations singularly and now bringing everyone together and being in that environment. It was just an observation. I was like, these are things I wouldn't have noticed, you know, 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's definitely top of mind when I enter those environments now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And especially because, you know, I would venture to guess, because I've joined you in some conferences in the last couple of years that are like not larger conferences, but, you know, places where people are gathering community and they are much more diverse because the topic is around diversity and the topic is around promoting inclusivity and building more representation. So, that's a great rant.
Just an observation. Not necessarily a rant, just an observation.
Okay, great. Well, I'll go into my rave and it's going to sound like a rant at first, but it'll end as a rave. I do this often, but so we would be remiss, Rob, if we didn't acknowledge what's happening on college and university campuses right now. So many of you who are, you know, in tune with the news know that there are protests happening across the nation, actually now globally, where students are peacefully calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and for universities to divest in Israeli-affiliated companies and also some academic programs. This was initially inspired by Jewish, Arab, Palestinian, Muslim students and allies at Columbia University and has since expanded really to many campuses throughout. So like UCLA, NYU, UT Austin, University of Utah, University of Massachusetts, you know, Indiana, Illinois, Brown, MIT, Harvard. It's all over. Like I don't know the number of universities, but every day it continues to increase. So I got to say, and I'm saying this from someone who has several family and friends who work at these universities, including BU, Northeastern, George Washington, and they all have observed these protests and have expressed how peaceful they are and were initially. You know, they were not violent whatsoever, really diverse groups of people coming together, celebrating Eid, celebrating Passover. And it wasn't until last week where police were called in. And then, of course, agitators also arrived. And anyways, how does this relate to DE&I in the workplace? Well, there are professors and university staff who are increasingly standing with students and what many describe as an effort to safeguard the students' rights to protest. Mm-hmm. These professors are being arrested. Some are being thrown to the ground, slammed, dragged across campus. Some are being banned from school property for, you know, 1 to 5 years. Some are given violations of trespassing. You know, when I reflect on this, it's like, it's outrageous. It's outrageous that leadership is allowing this to happen to its employees, let alone the students. That's like a whole other topic. You know, side note, I sent several employment lawsuits that will come their way that we'll probably talk about on this podcast. And so I just remind folks like the notion that fundamental values and rights like academic free speech, discourse are right now being weaponized. Higher education leaders and administrators, you know, are clamping down on free expression and dissent. It's a sad day. And so I faculty members, staff that, you know, at these, they're growing in terms of who's supporting and kind of making their opinions and demands known. They're writing to their leadership team. They're seeking leaders to resign. And this story, I'm sure, will become outdated as it evolves. And it's because it's super fluid right now. And anyway, this is a long, long ass way for a rape. But as a student right now, I am a student. I want our professors and faculty and staff to know that I am in support of them, and I thank them, and I see you for protecting and joining the students and calling for justice in the ceasefire for innocent Palestinians. So I'll end on that note.
Yeah, well, well said. And I definitely appreciate it. And I think that one of the things that I've been struck by, and I'm along the same lines, is right, like, I think that there are some university leaders and that see their job as to keep order. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think that's a fundamental mistake. I think that your job as a university leader or faculty is to develop young minds, awaken the consciousness of young people. And this is a logical outcome of doing so. And so, you know, and I think that, you know, you alluded to the fact they're peaceful and for the most part. Yeah. And then the job of the faculty and the leadership is to facilitate that peaceful protest in a most productive way. That's their role at an institution of higher education. So I totally agree with you. And, you know, I hope that there's at least safety on behalf of the folks that are out there.
Agree.
All right, Nadia. Well, this has been a rocking good time. Just a reminder, if you are looking for DEI and workplace culture strategy consulting, problem solving, or training, you can reach Nadia at nazconsultants.com and rob@takanoconsulting.com. Inclusive Collective is a production of Refillion Media. Love to hear from you. Send us your feedback at inclusivecollective@refillion.com. You can find us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn so you can subscribe to our ISLE monthly newsletter. And if you like what you heard, be sure to subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcast. Thanks again to our guest, Dr. Amanda Carroll. We'll talk to you all again in a couple of weeks. Thank you to you, Nadia.
Thank you to you too, Rob. Be well.
Take care.